And I will. Good evening and welcome to the regular meeting of the Clean Water Commission for November. Welcome, everybody, and I hope we can just start off with a roll call. My direction, I'll say Commissioner Olmstead here.
Jim Carlson.
Brian Peck.
David Morgan.
Jenny Van Breven.
Overall, Clark County.
Bobby Trusty, Clark County.
Ron Waringer, Clark County.
Very good. And then the packet, we would like to have Earl take us through that.
Tonight's packet is the meeting agenda for November 6th. Meeting notes from September 4th. Overview of stakeholders and the technical advisory committee notes. Discussion about what is the multi-use regional stormwater facility. And then election of the chair, vice chair for 2014. Those are the items in tonight's packet materials.
Oh, okay. We have a pretty deep meeting. Sure, my packet has what you just said. I don't think I have the roll call thing. Is that in there? Yeah, I've got the meeting summary of that. What was the last one?
The election.
Anyway, we'll just.
Nomination and elections. Are those in the packet or are those coming later?
It's coming later.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Very good. Sorry. Let's take a look at the meeting summary and determine if we're going to approve them as written or are there any changes in discussion.
I'll move that they be.
Okay, approved as written. There's quite a bit of information on that for the meeting. Public comments. No public is attending today, so I guess we can move along to communications with the public. It's been kind of a fervent time for a lot of discussion. Would anybody like to start off? Nope.
There was a great deal of discussion. I don't know if it's Clark County is overseeing the Ridgefield School stormwater, or is that all at Ridgefield?
I think it's all in Ridgefield. The high school?
The middle school and the grade school.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great deal of discussion about the size of the stormwater facility at the, certainly the lower school, retrofit. They're doing a huge retrofit.
Oh.
Huge construction project in the Ridgefield elementary school. That's normal. And people are aghast how big this stormwater area is, and it's taking away playground space. And people are like, why does it need to be that big?
Yeah.
It
should be multi-use.
That's what I
say. Yeah, there we go, right there.
Yeah.
Kids like to play in water.
Yeah. especially like first and second graders.
Yeah.
It's perfect. I haven't had a chance to review it. I was that was part of the Clark County world, but I guess it's just Ridgefield. So
no, we don't do anything in the incorporated area of Ridgefield, and I'm not really sure why they would do. As a pure retrofit of just making stormwater infrastructure better, unless they have a flooding problem somewhere. Ridgefield's not covered by a municipal stormwater permit, so nobody's making them do that.
So they must have had an infrastructure problem. They added a lot of pervious area.
So, yeah, that's interesting. I had actually a public comment with somebody in Ridgefield, too.
Hmm. Richfield's been exciting in the public ground recently.
This guy lives on a farm. You know Andy Stephenson?
Yeah, I do.
So
Stephenson's meats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's one of the kids. Anyway, there's New Traditions built the housing project right next to his. So I went over there. I was trying to help him out. I cut some drainage in for him to put some gutters up and stuff like that. So it's really interesting looking at this housing development because there is no retention pond or anything on this. And all there's a lot of flow that crosses over his road and washes out his driveway. So he went up there and he tried to cut in a little bit of a conveyance ditch to run it down. He didn't care that there was some water coming over there so much. He cared that it was washing out his driveway. So he asked to borrow I took my excavator, he kind of trimmed in this little conveyance ditch. I said, you're not even going to be close. I said, it'll just keep running across. I said, we need to cut in, a decent sized drain and pull it down and then let it flow out through your field and we can make it pretty decent, but I'm going to have to cut in a good sized one inch drain. And he'd been talking to the, trying to think of the guy's name from New Traditions. But it was interesting. The other thing was very interesting about, so some guy is up there and he's building this hardscape porch out of concrete with about a 2-degree fall falling right off into over onto kind of onto Andy's property. There's, there's 5-6 feet, whatever the regulations is on it. And so Andy called him up and I said, damn, call him up, talk to me, or you're gonna have to get something done about it. And finally the guy actually called me up. I said, that isn't gonna work. I said, there's no way that you're controlling that water on that hillside. Every lot is built on, and it sets on a slope about like this, mm-hmm. and it's all hardscape, and you can't control that water without some sort of facility, and there's some even, you just can't keep it all on site. They're only 6,500, 7,000 square foot lots with roof and driveway and everything. He said, well, yeah, I've kind of added the problem maybe a little bit over there. I said, but Andy doesn't have any money, he just wants it made right. He said, it's not an engineering feat to sit there and fix that for him. It's cut in a good drainage, let it go into his pond, let it go out into his field, but he needs to make right. Well, we're going to take care of it, So I'm waiting to hear from him, but it was just interesting because I don't know how, I wouldn't expect to ever see anything built like that in other areas. And quite most of the developments I see have some sort of stormwater facility in there. This thing had probably something somewhere, but it was really nothing, and it was really impacting the farm next door, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
There are stormwater facilities in Richfield, but I don't know. I don't know what the regulations are. And you say they're not covered by any part of that permit. Are they going to be in the next one? Really?
So they wouldn't technically have to really build anything to. I mean, they could get by with very little, right? Because that's what appears to look like what's happened there.
I'd have to look at it. I mean, towns a certain size are covered by municipal stormwater permits. Phase one was the largest. Phase two was the next size. So if the EPA directs states to do a phase three, that'll be the next round of smaller towns. They talked about it, but I haven't heard any definitive time frame. And then what, then it's purely up to the cities to create their development codes for managing runoff.
Yeah.
While they might not be governed by a municipal stormwater permit like we are, there are other regulations that they would need to meet that should cause them to have something in their development regulations, aside from protecting property, public health and property, from doing things like concentrating water and running it onto your neighbor's property, which should be illegal,
then
environmental protection, there's other things that, like under the State Environmental Policy Act or other regulations that should govern, they have something on the books to protect the streams and wetlands in Richfield. I don't know what it is.
It's just interesting because the runoff that's coming off of there probably isn't a whole lot of hardscape of street. I mean, there is a certain amount of street, but it's generally generated by all of the lots which set right on the very edge of the property line. And
Ridgefield has been enthusiastic about encouraging development.
I know. They have been.
Really, really enthusiastic.
They've had a lot of permits. They're doing well as far as putting rooftops up.
Right.
Well, that's kind of the difference between having a very strict permit, like we're operating under, versus not having one. It's really kind of amazing. And, you know, it's got to be confusing to the public. It's like, well, why do I have to do this? So, anyway, so it's good reporting. Is there anybody else that has any comments, connections? I brought that book for you, Virginia, because I promised before when we were first talking about our
workshop. I remember. Mm-hmm. Then I read a lot of news about it, and they kind of, I don't know.
Well,
I will read it.
Yeah, if you read the crib notes version or you read the actual document and you know, give us your feedback, that would be good, because it might roll into some of our later agenda items today, because what we're thinking about is what role the commission will play on looking at the development of a multi-use stormwater facility, and there may be some techniques in there that are useful, or there may be some that you think shouldn't be used. But anyway, it was brought up to us by Commissioner Medore, and I bought it for you.
Okay, very good.
Which book is this?
Moving right along, the next item on the agenda is an update for the Stormwater Code Manual, Technical and Stakeholder Advisory Committees. I'm the liaison for the Technical Advisory Committee, and Jim, have you been attending the stakeholder meetings?
I made it to the first one. I did not make it to the last one.
Sure. So we're to report about that now with Ron, and I...
You're going to do the technical one, review.
I'm just going to pick up where they leave off.
Yeah. Well, I'd kind of like to get a little overview on the technical advisory committee meetings, of which there have been three, are, you know, attended by 15 people. It's a big group led by Ron and then his staff, Rod Swanson and Jane Kleiner, have been really good at lots of good information to the group, and the group is participatory, which means they go in and actually actively comment on the work that's being done. And as you know, there's a very arduous stormwater manual. We had a presentation on it earlier this year, I think, or last year, and it showed how they're going to try to update it. Well, they've been really aggressive, doing a great job, and going through that manual, determining how to make it into one single manual that would be much more useful for design engineers that would be working in the county. And they're also going through all the codes which influence drainage and, you know, erosion and work with surface water, so that there's no apparent conflict between the two, which is really helpful efficient development. And it's also helpful for not having people break down in the middle of the process of trying to get their permits approvals for the projects. So I just wanted to commend them and say that the other aspect of what they're working on is low impact development, and they did get a consultant to put together the report on the low impact development barriers, specifically Clark County. There's been other documents about that, but what are the barriers, what prevents us from doing low-impact development on our property? Or what keeps, there's a lot of drawbacks for it, and they're trying to work through identifying the barriers and then find solutions for them. So that in the future, when the NPDES permit is updated and it requires them to look at low-impact development first, that the developer will know what they can and can't do and to be able to do it more efficiently. So that's just a Kyle Edition view of it. I think it's a really interesting group, and I think that the materials that they have are quite self-explanatory. If anybody's interested in those two topics, they're very easy to read, and they're also quite extensive. This, for example, is the low impact development barriers analysis, and they've gone through and done analysis on pretty much all the things that are influencing the county right now for development. So it's pretty precedent setting. There's not that many jurisdictions that have tried to do this and done it very effectively. So I think they're to be commended. And I think Ron wanted to say what they're really doing. I'm just saying I think they're doing a good job.
Yeah, for the as Nancy pointed out, as we talked about earlier this year, our new municipal stormwater permit requires us to rewrite our code and design manual to make them equivalent with the state's guidance manual, as well as doing an analysis of the entirety of all of our development codes to identify barriers to implementing that code and manual. The timeline is, as we reported before, is relatively short. We have to have a draft code and design manual to the Department of Ecology by July 1st, 2014. And that needs to be, pretty close to done. In other words, if we're happy with it and they review it and they tell us, hey, you're good to go, we think this is an equivalent manual to the state manual and you can adopt it, we're pretty much done without, maybe some minor changes. If we draft a code and design manual for development projects and ecology reviews it and they say there's some problems here, then we have to work on those problems. After we submit it to them July 1, 2014, then we have another year to adopt and make effective that code and design manual, so July 1, 2015. Seems like a long time, but when you're doing as extensive of a review and potential rewrite of not only our stormwater code and design manual, but other parts of the development code, that time goes pretty quickly, especially if you're trying to get input from your community and not do it in a vacuum. So that's what the technical advisory committee is for, people that are practitioners in this, people that are often down at the permit center here trying to get approvals from Clark County. And I think to add on something Nancy was talking about was we're trying to get as much input as we can from people on what they like and don't like about the process that we have, how we review their stormwater plans for their development projects, because as we said to you and we said to them before, there's only so much flexibility we have in writing a code and design manual that complies with the state's guidance. About this much flexibility.
Yeah, yeah.
But what we have said is that we recognize this is going to be a bit of a burden to people because it's a new process and it's new requirements. And so if we can improve our overall development review process, we can save them, some time and money there. We can get them through the process with less pain and less cost. So that's what we've been talking in the first three meetings with the technical advisory committee. We're still talking about what it is that we're trying to do and how we're going to do it. We're starting to turn out chapters now of that design manual, which is going to be a pretty comprehensive manual. And we're going to start submitting those to the advisory committee for them to review. They have the barriers analysis that we got done with. And we're only, we're about 90% of the way there on that, but it's out for their review and input from them. And so this will be the process over the next, from now till June, as we write the code and manual, is produce, review it internally, review it through our technical advisory committee, try and find fatal flaws, is there something we're not intending to do here, and keep working towards that angle. Just another quick note on the LID barriers analysis, just to give people some context. So what we're trying to avoid, actually what the state is requiring us to do in this review, is say if you require something in your stormwater code, find places where there might be ripple effects in other parts of the code that might preclude people from doing this. Some simple examples are, there are certain road classifications in the county's transportation standards that say right now you cannot use permeable pavement on these types of roads. Mm-hmm. So if someone's coming in to build that type of road and they're reading our stormwater code and it's telling you to to either minimize impervious area or for roads, you have to go through this checklist of low-impact development practices, and you get to permeable pavement, and they're saying, well, this is telling me I need to use permeable pavement on this road, but the transportation standards are telling me I can't. So what do I do? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And a couple other quick examples. We're required to ask people on their projects to minimize impervious area to the extent feasible. So somebody may come in to do a commercial project and say, well, you know, normally I'd be doing X amount of parking, but one of the ways I can minimize impervious area and minimize cost to me as a developer is to minimize the amount of parking for my commercial project. And so then if I just don't have to put pavement down, I don't have to worry about whether it's permeable or not. I don't have to build a big stormwater facility to collect all the runoff off of it. So they come in to do that, but then they go to our parking standards for certain types of projects and land uses, and our parking standards tell them that they have to have X so many parking, and they're like, well, how do I minimize impervious area through parking if you're telling me I need all these spots that I don't really want? That's another example of the types of things that we're looking at. Now, some of the things that we're going to find are absolute barriers. You know, in order to meet our stormwater code, they actually have to violate another portion of the code. Those are flat-out things that we need to change. But in our approach and working on the barriers analysis, we're working with a consulting firm that did the review for us, and we said, you know, as you guys are pouring through all of Title 40, which is hundreds of pages of the county's development code, let us know what you think are not necessarily barriers, but more just impediments or things that make it hard to implement low-impact development. Right. It may not be a strict barrier, yeah, but it might be a disincentive. Mm-hmm. And then we can take that and discuss that with our advisory commissions and our decision-makers here and say, you know, this right here, we have to change. The state's going to require us to change this. This one, we don't necessarily have to change, but here's the problem that we see. Do you want to change it or not? So we sort of have a spectrum of barriers, and we can engage people in that discussion and decide how much we want to try and work on these other issues. It becomes a much bigger project when I start going and talking to people about parking standards. I mean, if you want to fill a room during a work session, talk about parking standards. It doesn't seem like it would be all that fascinating, but it's a really polarizing discussion. So. That can sort of snowball on us, and we'll need to be cognizant of the implications. But we have more time on that than we do on our code.
When I was working at Tiger Stop in Orchards, and they did a big, huge impervious area that they did, I was amazed by the amount of parking spaces that they were required to have. It was like three times the amount of people that were working there.
I mean, it's so important.
Somebody made that rule for some reason.
I'm definitely sensitive to it because there are places that I won't go because I can't find a place to park.
Right, the health department.
But then there are also other times when people size, you know, commercial lots or something for, you know, the sale the day after Thanksgiving. You know, and that's the only time that you're going to see 2/3 of that lot full, but that's an important business consideration for them. So. What we're trying to do is just provide some flexibility. Maybe not have, you know, maximum limits on parking. Maybe have minimum limits and things like that. But those are
examples. Which one trumps?
What's that?
Which one trumps?
The maximum or the minimum?
Yeah.
Well, you only have one. Yeah. You know, you kind of don't say. There was a discussion about, well, for example, we could limit the amount of impervious area that someone puts down by giving a maximum amount of parking that you can even provide. You know, part of the discussion on that is, you know, even having impervious area is a disincentive, because if you put it down, now you have to manage the runoff from that, and that's really expensive. So most people are going to be looking to put down the minimum, and the minimum makes more sense.
See, I'd rather do a minimum and phase it, you know, have some reserve area, which would be pervious, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, hey, if I have to come up with a solution because my business is doing so good, I mean, I'm sure Kmart would like to rip up about 9/10 of their parking lots.
Yeah. I mean, why? That's the important thing to talk about is why do we have huge parking lots? And is that what people want? Or is something making them put this down? And then we kind of paint them into a corner, and now they have to deal with all this runoff that they may or may not want to deal with. So the discussion kind of rolls into a technical level, working with our technical advisory committee on those barriers, and then moving that at some point over to the stakeholder advisory committee, which is sort of a higher level, non-technical discussion, and start proposing these policy recommendations to them and getting their input. Do we go after things like this? Are these things that we want to change? Do we just want to leave alone? That sort of stuff. So that's what we'll be doing going forward.
Yeah, I might add, too, that, you know, up in the Puget Sound, we've been working with stormwater for many, 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 many years. And the thing that stimulated the discussion was because all those little towns east of Seattle, Bellevue, Redmond, all of them, every single interchange had this gigantic business park built around each of the roads. So all that road surface, all that paving all the way around each one, on the east side of Seattle, running, and then all the runoff going into kind of complex, you know, lake, bay, channels, Puget Sound area. It just was decimated in a really short period of time. And so everybody else in Washington has to kind of look at it in their own way. And I think that you can use what's been done up in the Puget Sound to the extent possible, kind of build on it and make it better, because it really needs to be more simplified. And that's the approach that they're taking. And you know, it makes so much sense, but you have to do this much work. That's really a lot of work. People hate to dig into codes, but if you do it the first time, then from then on out, it's kind of like, oh, this is just kind of a small edit job. And I guess you did revise the code one other time, but this is incorporating dispersed systems like low impact development, and that's probably the hardest thing. That put it on the property level, it puts it on the parcel level. So I just think it's a good effort, and I enjoy going to the meetings. I would expect that others might be interested in going to those meetings too, or at least reading through the documents. As they continue to come out.
We've had good attendance on our technical advisory committee. Our stakeholder advisory committee has quite a few people from the development community. You know, I don't remember that. I don't think we have the New Traditions home builder, but we have other builders and owners of building businesses. We have developers. We have property managers. And a lot of people are telling us they want to stay involved. We're trying to provide as much information via website and email and getting people to work on their own time rather than come to a bunch of meetings. And they're appreciative of that. They're busy trying to finish up the construction season. So our last stakeholder advisory committee was pretty light. So we're trying to figure out how to make sure we have attendance there. But I think up till now, there hasn't really been a lot of real, you know, meat to review. You know, I know our technical advisory committee is going to be happy now because we're giving them text to chapters in our design manual. We'll start putting out code sections. We have memorandums that have been provided to us to review, and I think the stakeholder advisory committee, that same sort of thing starts to happen.
Oh, I see.
Where we start taking higher level things like this. It's in your packet, this frequently asked questions on the code update. You know, we'll start taking bulleted high level. Here are some significant issues that we're discussing and changes that we're making for your information and for you to review and provide input. Mm-hmm. So sort of cliff notes versions of a lot of things. We'll start seeing that over the next few months and have better conversations. I think in our last stakeholder advisory committee, one of the potential policy issues that we brought up was the county's current practice and our allowance in our code to take on public ownership of stormwater facilities in subdivisions. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, we're preparing sort of an analysis of what that means and a potential policy choice to present to our decision makers to say perhaps that's something we address in the code, is whether the county continues to take public ownership of subdivision of stormwater facilities. That generated a lot of discussion at our stakeholder advisory committee. It was one, it was fun. It was better than just providing stuff for people to read. But I think that's kind of how things will go. People will get more interested in some of these higher level policy decisions discuss it.
Forgive me for being ignorant, but so like if I build a subdivision now, I have a certain section of stormwater facility that I'm required to do, and I build, and then I dedicate it to you guys.
You can.
And then you have to keep it up.
Yep.
And that's the policy now, and it's always been that way.
Yeah.
So
it's an option.
Talking about changing that.
Possibly.
And making them, when they develop it, and then they have to maintain it afterwards.
Yeah.
And so, well, that would save money then, wouldn't it?
Certainly for the same cost. So it costs the developers a lot more.
The developers are not going to like that. Okay.
Yeah.
The developers like the choice. Developers, 9 times out of 10, then form an HOA and transfer the responsibility.
Oh, then just do it to the residents.
To the residents.
Responsible.
And it's the same, the stormwater infrastructure is no different than the sewer that they put in.
Right.
The water, the roads, they do these subdivisions, and the majority of the time they dedicate those to the county or Clark Regional or somebody else.
And then this adds to the bill.
And that's, it adds to the county
maintenance. That's what I mean. Okay.
And that's actually the norm, Brian, really, for most municipalities is to take ownership of the storm infrastructure. There are some that don't, and we're looking at that. And there's pluses and minuses to either one. In my experience, I've found that HOAs struggle sometimes to maintain their stormwater infrastructure. It's costing them. And they're looking at it going, no, now let me get this straight. I'm paying the clean water fee, the same as the guy over there in that subdivision. We're like, yep. But I'm also paying my HOA to maintain my pond, and they're not. We're like, that's right.
And so that is your ego.
That's right.
The answer is
yes. It needs a lot of work.
I'm just the messenger.
And that was in the fine print on page 248.
Right. When you purchased your home. But it's, it's a policy consideration. Those are the sort of things, like I said, that are we'll be presenting more at our stakeholders group and getting that input. That topic was just broached. That one's by far from being done with discussion. But
I can imagine that.
Yeah, and we'll take that to the technical advisory committee as well at some point.
Well, and the other thing that strikes me in this whole discussion is like the bigger people are going to get this figured out really fast, but the smaller contractors who come in for a permit, and then they're going to be like, what do you mean? This is the way it's always worked. And that discussion, it'll filter through pretty fast, but that crew of people, like the Anderson Homes and all the homemakers, they've got their engineers. Their engineers are going to figure out, and they're going
to
be done.
What's interesting, though, is it's like when you think about, if a homeowner association is maintaining a facility, they don't have a problem maintaining a little park, right? So if you made a multi-use facility,
they wouldn't really have a problem maintaining it quite so much.
It wouldn't be as painful. It would be like,
They like their little park.
They don't like the little.
Yeah, they don't like the bathtub.
They don't like the
bathtub. Do you want to add a little bit more about the stakeholder? We pretty much covered it? Okay. Because we're having an exciting
process and timeline. That's where we are.
And this frequently asked questions, the stormwater update. Is this going to be done like on a monthly basis? It's kind of a nice thing. This says fall, so maybe quarterly.
This was a sort of a one-time document to get the process started.
Okay.
But our program coordinator, Jane Tesmer-Kleiner, who's working on it, is also producing a newsletter.
Okay.
And the newsletter provides the routine updates we also have a section on our website that's purely devoted to this code and manual update. That's where products are going. That's where meeting notes from the advisory committees are going.
Yes.
And people can stay informed there. And I suspect we will continue to provide updates at Clean Water Commission meetings on the high-level stuff moving forward to get your input.
Excellent. Okay.
And all this culminates, like I said, into our submittal to Ecology in the middle of next year. When we get into the spring of 2015, we'll have a series of public hearings on the matter for the board to hear from the public. Mm-hmm. We might be scheduling work sessions with the board to have public meetings, keep that where we inform them of where we are in the process. And we're still kind of trying to figure out what we want to do in terms of outreach and awareness of these coming changes, because as David brought up, you know, this applies to a whole lot of projects. It's not just big projects, it applies to little projects. And those are going to be the hard ones for us, is to get those folks, sort of the mom and pop, I hate that term, but mom and pop folks through the process. So that requires us to make sure that we have a process they can get through, and we provide training and we provide materials and we make things as easy as possible.
Right.
One of the things we proposed doing, and I think I brought this up last time, was after we get our design manual, which is going to be about this thick, and mainly written for engineers, to do a companion manual to that. It's a small projects manual that pulls out the relevant requirements for smaller projects and then provides easy-to-use tools for people that don't have engineers. We propose doing that. I submitted a grant to the Department of Ecology to get funding for that manual for regional significance, because we talked to all the other jurisdictions who will likely use our manual if it meets their needs, and they said, yeah, that's great, but I didn't get funding for that project. The state didn't think it was important.
A great idea.
So
you didn't get it, or you haven't heard?
Not yet.
We didn't get it.
Did it for this cycle. Can you resubmit next year?
We could next year. I don't know if we'll have time, but that's something I've communicated, you know, in terms of a budget issue, is that some of these nice to have things, I don't have the money to get them done. So we're trying to perhaps look at partnerships with other folks to help do that. But that was kind of a bummer. But we still want to do stuff like that to get people through the process.
Well, and it's a lot of time, too. Like when I go into the development, the permit department, and they start talking to me, and I did a heating system, and this long conversation because I was doing something that wasn't really something that anyone had done before, and I'm talking to a senior permit guy for an hour, and you come in and you need to, you know, wherever you hit that barrier where you got to really make these design changes to meet the new needs, and if it's just you working on your house or me working on my house, what do you mean I have to do this? What do you talking? And there's hours of staff time there explaining that. Somebody who's trying to do the right thing, who's trying to come in and get a permit and actually do it the way it's supposed to be.
And that's how we've also communicated that, not only educating the community and how much we want to go out and do things like open houses. You know, we've done those before. We can open up this room and have an open house and nobody comes. But we'll probably do a few of those, as well as the hearings, and try and make people aware. But to your point, David, you know, absolutely, not only educating people on the outside, but we need to make sure that our staff, and not only just our department and our group, but because we don't actually do permit review, we just make the rules.
Right.
That our staff are trained, because if our staff don't know what you're supposed to do, they're not going to be able to help you do it.
Yeah, that permit counter. Right.
Well, and the time that takes, too. Like, the time at the permit office to explain this to me and everybody else when they go in there and say, what are you talking about? Like, that's a cost that could be defined in terms of validating the easy to understand.
Yeah. So we have a presentation tonight, two-pronged presentation, the overview of EPA's audit that we heard about last time. And how are we going to lead that off, Ron?
What? I don't actually have a presentation, more of just a little speech.
A little speech, okay.
A little summary.
All right.
And Earl had asked if I could come give an overview of that, because I think somebody had asked about it. We know that we had the audit by the EPA scheduled in September, so which would have been after your last meeting. So trying to put it in a nutshell, we know that we have a municipal stormwater permit. We know that it's thick with requirements and makes us do a bunch of stuff. Department of Ecology has delegated the authority by the EPA to give the permit out to municipalities in the state. We generally report to them and work through compliance with them. The Environmental Protection Agency has a nationwide initiative going on to audit permittees to ensure they're complying with the state programs. Sort of a, and it's kind of an audit in a way of ecology as well, to make sure that they're enforcing the provisions of the permit that they issue us. So it's quite a process to go through. We heard in August that we were going to be audited in middle of September. The EPA starts with submitting a document request to you, and we had to, mainly Rod Swanson and I, and Bobby had a huge role to play in helping us package all this stuff, but we had about 50 some items in that we had to generate and give to the EPA for them to review prior to the audit. So that was an extensive effort. In our best interest to give them as much information as possible, because otherwise we're going to be doing it when they're on site. So we wanted them to be educated and informed about what we do when they get here, and it kind of focuses their audit effort. Then they came down with a team of, it was an audit team. There were 4 members of the EPA, 2 members of the Department of Ecology. And they kind of let us know an agenda. We've talked about in here the major elements of our program: capital construction, monitoring, outreach and education, maintenance, source control, those types of things. They focus on 4 elements of your program for their time here. So they let us know which 4 they were going to focus on. The audit team was here for 4 days, and it was a mix of office time and field time, where we discussed things in the office, we gave them presentations, we provided boxes and boxes of documents for them to review. Then they let us know what they wanted to go look at in the field, and so we all jumped in vans and we drove all over the place for a couple days. And you know, you show up on site and you show up with the audit team, and perfectly honest, kind of cross your fingers, everything's cool when you get there, because you don't really know where they're going to go.
Did that day they tell you where they want to go?
And they told us when we got here, because you know, we said, I've got to be able to get you there. We need to have access to some of these sites. So they gave us an indication of where they wanted to go. The 4 areas that they focused on were our construction inspection program, our pollution source control program, our operations and maintenance program, and our illicit discharge, illicit connection detection and elimination program. So we knew in advance that those are the areas that they weren't going to use, and that's where we spent the majority of our time. They just sort of do a sampling of what we do. And so they go through the permit and say, well, you're supposed to do this, 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 so let's see this, and where's this document, and you know, you're supposed to have this out on the site, so let's go out to the site and show up unannounced and make sure that's there. And you're supposed to be doing these things on this site, so let's go to that site, make sure those things are being done. That's what we did. I mean, it was a good learning experience. I learned a lot, and I thought they did a pretty fair job. The O&M program, we looked at stormwater facilities. They wanted us to conduct inspections of stormwater facilities, because we're supposed to do that.
Yeah.
So they wanted us to get an inspector on site and have him walk through the inspection, which is kind of awkward for him. And he's like, well, now I'm inspecting the... They're like, all right, we know, but they wanted to do that. What are you looking at? Why are you looking at? What do you do here? What do you do if you see this?
Yeah.
We went out to our 78th Street Operations Center. We went out to sort of a rural shed where we, out by Hawkinson, where we, you know, store gravel and salt and chemicals and do equipment maintenance and make sure we're doing everything we need to do on the site there. They wanted to see how we do source control inspections, or we'll go to businesses and industrial sites and we say, well, here's the activity you have on site, and these are the best management practices you're supposed to be using, so we checked that they're using them, and they wanted to go see a couple of those. We went to an auto parts store out by 134th Street. They got to check that out. It was kind of funny because we parked in a hotel parking lot up there. We decided we didn't want to send a team of six auditors and three county staff into this auto parts store. And so they just sent a couple of people. And we're standing in the hotel, and I'm just kind of BSing with the auditors. And someone comes out of the hotel and takes a bucket of mop water and dumps it in the store.
Nice!
While they're standing there. And I'm like, oh, come on, man. No way. It was pretty funny. And that's what happens. That's
right.
Stuff happens.
Where are they supposed to?
Not in the storm drain.
No, but where?
They can dump it in the bathtub. They can dump it in the janitor's sink.
In your mop sink.
They can dump it on...
That'd be where you're supposed to put it in your...
They can dump it on the grass
mop
if
sink.
They want.
Oh, yeah.
But they can't dump it in the... They can't dump it where they dumped it. The next one we went to was kind of interesting. We went to a Carl's Jr. to inspect, like, their dumpster area and where their drains are relative to their kitchen. A lot of people dump grease and stuff into the drains in some of these areas. And that guy actually said we couldn't come in, but totally, you know, he was like, listen, it's lunchtime. My business is full. And he said, can you come back at another time? And that's what happens all the time when we talk to people when we show up on site. So, you know, just sort of real world stuff. Like I said, construction sites. Anyway, we focused on those areas. We sort of heard things as we go along, and as the audit team essentially writes, you know, they write notes and they're going to write a report, and that report will have in it findings, but along a spectrum of severity. It might be, you know, you're supposed to be doing this and you're doing it this way, but here's a better idea, we think. Well, here's another idea. You could do it this way. In the middle of the spectrum are some areas of concern. It's not a violation of your permit, but they're concerned about your ability to comply, and they might make recommendations in the areas of concern. And at the other end of the spectrum will be, here's an audit finding that's a violation of your municipal stormwater permit. Here's your notice of violation. So there'll be a spectrum of findings in the audit. They gave us an indication of kind of some things that they saw, and I expect to have, and I'm guessing at this point, but I expect to have findings along the whole spectrum. I mean, nothing just egregious, but there's a lot of things for us to do in that permit. And there's a lot of record keeping, a lot of training, a lot of record keeping about training. And so you could easily have a notice of violation that says, well, we know you're training your staff, but you don't have a record of which staff need to be trained and what people were trained on an ongoing basis, and that's a violation of your permit. They'll take this report, they'll write the report over probably in November, and then the process is for that audit report to go to the EPA compliance team. And then the compliance team determines where those findings fall on the spectrum of severity. And then we get our compliance report. I just recently talked to the lead auditor this week about whether or not the government shutdown is impacting our audit timing, our report timing, and probably not the audit report, but there are some ongoing budget issues that we talked about that may delay the final report into next year at some point. Sort of EPA's budget has been drastically cut, so
yeah.
They're doing things like retreats to find out what is important for them to do and what's not important. So
yeah.
They may find that ongoing actions, they want to finish up the things that they've already done. I suspect that's what they'll do. They'll probably say, we have this audit 3/4 of the way done, we should get it done. Maybe it means they don't go do another one. But I'm just telling you that for the timing, for when it comes back and we're here in January and you say, we don't have that report yet? And I'll say, well, not yet. So sometime between now and someday, we'll have that report. But that's what it was. It was a lot of our time, and we had, you know, a lot of people here work at the county working on it to make sure we conducted a good audit, and I think we went through the process nicely, and we'll see a range of findings.
Does the EPA compile that on a regional basis, so it's just regional 10, or do you individual basis?
That's a good question. I mean, I know it's definitely on an individual basis. I don't know whether they will provide a regional summary to say, how are things going in Region 10?
Yeah, and the question I have also is, does it roll up into, you know, priorities for the whole EPA? Because I know what they're looking at federally is also just kind of scrutinizing the Clean Water Act and compliance with it, and the NPDES being part of that. So you weren't told anything about how they might use it, or
not more programmatically.
Yeah.
How much of that gets into the ongoing issues at the state level with the permit and the permit appeal?
This review was entirely for our last reporting year, so this was for 2012 when we were still under the old permit.
Okay.
So we weren't audited for compliance with the new permit. So it didn't factor into it at all.
Okay. And not the permit. But that was the permit that was being argued.
That we were arguing?
With the state Supreme Court and the...
Oh, yeah. I see your question. So
yeah.
our previous compliance issues also didn't factor into it.
Okay.
Because they didn't look at our capital program, and it wasn't one of their target areas. They didn't even bring it up.
Okay.
Interesting.
That made some of the questions easier to answer.
Well, thank you. That was very interesting. And this is part of our presentation tonight is about the project plan for the pilot multi-use regional stormwater facility, which we talked about last meeting. And Earl and Jim are going to be that part of the discussion. I think there's a piece of your packet
What I wanted to do is, at the last meeting, I kind of pointed you guys in a certain direction, and which is okay. But at the same time, I wanted to find out a little bit more about what you guys need, what you guys want. So what I tried to do is just give you a basic outline of the who, where, the what, who, why, where, when, and then also put together a list of partners or potential partners that this group could work with to determine what would be a good fit as you guys go forward in any kind of process. So let me back up even further than that. I think one of the things where we really need to be looking at too is, what did the Clean Water Commission be tasked with from the Board of County Commissioners? And I went back to one of the little notes that I saw where the board had actually said, develop a model. And so this becomes a question of, does develop a model mean talk about the description of the model, description of the process, or does it mean on-hands work going through all the various phases of doing a project? And so that's something that I think this group needs to tackle a little bit as well, not just looking at who, what, when, where, and why kind of business, but think about, is this group's task to look at model, to describe the model, put it down in a way that you can give it as a report to the Board of County Commissioners, or actually you want to get your hands dirty, if you will, and get involved in a variety of the day-to-day actions and activities. Having said that, the Thomas Lake Wetland East Project and or the Harding Project, I'll talk about that more in a minute. Those two projects are already, Thomas Lake Wetland East Project is basically already on the way, it's already underway. The other one will probably start no sooner than 2015, perhaps 2016. So both of those projects offer multi-use capabilities. That would be paths, educational opportunities, doing away with fences, that kind of stuff, so we don't have, it'll be an amenity improvement to each of those areas. So the issue becomes one of, for this group to say, are we talking about an approach? Are we talking about getting in there and doing some stuff with our hands? I can see this group maybe doing some education outreach in any one of these areas, but at the same time, talking about the overall process from start to finish. Because when the board said, go get some grant money, look at this, build it, so on and so forth, I don't know if they were talking about getting in there and doing all of that, because that means that you become more like a developer. But you really don't want to be in the development business. You want to be describing how that process might work.
Right.
So that's something to be thinking about.
So I don't know where all of you are at, but those are things to consider as we move forward on any of this pilot project or this multi-use project discussion. So the first question is, in my mind, the first question is, are we talking about a process, or are we talking about a process plus getting your hands dirty, figuratively speaking?
Comments on that?
What do y'all think?
I'm definitely interested in the technical aspects of both the decision and how it's going to work. But that's also if everybody else is just sort of generally interested, I can follow up on the technical stuff easily too.
Technical, are we speaking?
Well, I'm looking at it and saying, if the group wants to, if you're talking about just some general steps to look at the process, you still have to put all the technical stuff together. If you're talking about being more of trying to do what a developer would be doing, you're talking about having to secure funding, potential, identifying the potential benefits of the project, looking at buy-in from the community, looking at interest, getting people interested in your project, talking about the multi-use aspect of the project, looking at describing the engineering, the permitting, design, and construction of the project, which is far beyond what this group can do.
So, but, you know, my things what I have an interest in, like we were talking about a little bit the other day, so in order to make the project even functional or being able to work, so you've got various different stakeholders who are going to be involved. And, you know, we brought up, you know, we've got state agencies, we've got schools, we've got WSU, we've got a whole group of players out there, including county and private developers. That's what that is in there, who have to come on board in order to make that, you know, this concept actually work. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, if you're going to build, you know, and I haven't emailed, who was I going to email over at WSU?
Valentina?
Huh?
Lynn?
Yeah, Lynn. Which I will. I want to get some input from her on it. But part of it, you know, when I brought this up, and Benton, you know, I asked him, I cut him outside one time, I said, hey, you know, why is it that, you know, the state and the county can't sit there and work together on a project? I mean, part of the trail is, we're going through, this is part of my thing, what I want to see is, it's like, here's the state piece of right-of-way that was bought for, off of Joe Blow, okay, to widen 219th to turn it into Highway 503, that intersects with 92nd Avenue, which is county property, okay? You got state, you got county, and you got private people around there, and you're going to have potential developers over there, right? So, and Don hasn't done anything with it as far as I know, and I'll pressure him, because he said he would, that's something that would be part of what he would go find out for us, okay? As far as I'm concerned, it's like, how do we get the state to participate in a multi-use project? How do we get the developer to participate in it? How do we get the county to participate in it? Why not just throw in WSU and all these entities in there to get them all on board to sit there and share their pieces of the pie, the funding, and the design concept to make it a true regional multi-use project? I think that's one of the most important first things that actually has to happen on it. More than coming up with the flat, low slope design and everything.
I mean, sure. Yeah.
But all of which interests me in there. But so there is a group of stakeholders out there who, you know, we've got to get a feel on, you know, what some of those roadblocks are. Or I do, but that's something I want. I don't know if I'm jumping off on it, but I don't think you can build something other than a utilitarian looking
stormwater facility without having buy-in from several different groups.
Yeah, one of the things to keep in mind for this group as well as for the county, we're going to be looking at what is a 2013-18 permit and looking at a certain section of the permit which talks about new development, and retrofitting. Mm-hmm. And so Thomas Wetland East is a retrofit. Harding Farms stormwater facility is a retrofit as well. Now both of those projects will offer opportunity to provide some level of multi-use, because there's going to be paths. There's going to be, like I said, taking down, not going to be any fences. There's not going to be a penitentiary-looking facility. It'll be much more aesthetically pleasing. And the intent also is to have the ability to do education out there so that there could be some signage out there. And so what we would do in that particular facility is to see whether or not something like what you're talking about would work there. Now, the flip side of that is, going back to what I started at the beginning here, and what you just described is more process.
It's more process, right.
And that's, I think, where this group really should be is, where we're talking about the process.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the description from start to finish, how you go through this process, and what do you need to do along the way. And who do you bring into the discussion, and when do you bring into the discussion, and what are the overall pros and cons of all of this?
Yeah, and to follow up on what you just said, I think you lost me a little bit at that. Thomas, it's a retrofit. It's already on the CIP.
Right.
You know basically all the ins and outs. You've already gone through most of the process for it. This would just be kind of putting a couple of design features on to make it multi-use. It wasn't our task that we committed to the POCC to do. Wasn't that more... can we find a way, test a way, to produce a multi-use regional facility that engages the public, and that engages, you know, the owners and the public? And so I thought our task was not so much to take a CIP project and kind of guide how it would be multi-use, but it would be to develop.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a stepwise way to consider regional facilities for Clark County. So a little bit higher elevation. We don't get all down the weeds trying to figure out all the details, because the county has vast experience to do that. But ours would be to take a look at how to engage the public. I mean, let's all manage stormwater responsibly. If we don't want to all go out there and make little tiny LIDs, how could we do something that would benefit the public, the community?
So,
I guess I'm agreeing with you. It's a process that we're more akin to, and that we could start now. But the only thing is, I think we'd like to also see something happen, something on the ground. So it might be concerning to me a little bit about how to get something like that initiated and get off the ground when we've got these two other projects that are already in the books. You see that kind of question mark in my mind? It's like, oh, if we start this and we get partners engaged, we don't really have a project. You know what I mean? We don't really have a location or a real... It's all kind of pie-in-the-sky process.
So, question on that. So, going back onto the partnerships, or, you know, building those partnerships in there. So probably one of the number one issues is lack of funding, right? I mean,
typically.
Is it a money thing? Because it is a money thing, you know.
The number one driver behind regional facilities is geography. Mm. In order to have a partner, you need to have two people that need stormwater management in one spot. Number one driver is where. So you could have a partner in the state doing a project up by Battleground. You can have a partner at Washington State University. You can have a partner out in East County. But they'll have no interest in a regional facility unless they can get the water from their development project to that facility.
So, but regional being, okay, so...
Regional means two developments use it.
That's it.
At a minimum.
Right.
It'd be 10.
But regional means more than one participant in the facility.
Right.
That's all it means. Right. So, I keep going back on the, you know, the state pond on, or the stormwater on 219th and basically 92nd, which, you know, was totally independent on their part.
I mean, did the county have a need for a stormwater facility there at 92nd?
Are
we improving 92nd Avenue?
So that's, does the county have, well.
But your other example.
You're probably right on that particular one.
But not the private development side. That's another, so the common partnering that could happen would be if either the county or a city or a state is putting in a transportation project and the land uses surrounding that project are residential or commercial or whatever. Take commercial, it's a good example. Mm-hmm. Should they be considering the stormwater needs of the surrounding developments as they build one for a road?
Well, in Three Creeks LLC, which is Killian, which I think they're digging their pond right now. Somebody's digging a pond on 15th. Trust me.
Oh, no.
There's a hole in the ground. And there's one on 179th, up almost up to 29th, almost up adjacent to properties that you guys own. Yeah. So, but for sure, the Killian project is something that, now there's a class, that right there is a classic piece, and trust me, don't look that big, and maybe it's not their property, it's something for something relatively small. But as the traffic impacts increase on the street, and ideally someday that will probably be four lanes instead of two lanes, there's going to be, have to be infrastructure improvements on the stormwater there. There is, right there is a spot where somebody could have some sort of partnership on making a facility right. That was multi-use, multi-agency. I mean, it could be.
So here's what's going on in that area, and it gets exactly back to what Earl was just talking about. 179th Street I-5 interchange needs to be rebuilt. 179th Street needs to be improved, widened, going both ways from I-5. And that whole area around there from 15th to I-5 and pushing out to 29th and even on the other side is all zoned for and will develop as commercial property. So all this is going to happen in that one particular area. Why aren't people partnering on managing stormwater in that area? And so I think what Earl is proposing is, does this group want to go out and find a spot and talk about planning a spot to dig a hole, because that's where the stormwater facility is, for some development and actually engage in a project? Or does this group want to tackle the issue that you bring up, Jim, is that people aren't partnering as much as they should on broader scale stormwater management? We're missing opportunities by the state doing I-5 and the county doing 179th and private developers doing all that, building all their own little facilities, and they're not working together. Because I can't answer
I kind of can, but
there's not a ready answer for why aren't people partnering. That's something to talk about.
Now that's,
is it a process issue? Is it a philosophy? Is it a funding issue? Is it a timing issue? What is it? And perhaps what could this group discuss
right.
And perhaps find out and make a recommendation to the county to say, you know, you guys should be doing this, you shouldn't be doing it, it's water on the bridge, whatever. That's what Earl is saying is, we want to talk about the process of doing this, or do we want to do a project? I don't speak for Earl, but that's what I heard Earl say.
But to you guys, what do you guys want to work on? A process. That's my vote.
I think the process makes more sense.
You can do both
down
the road, but this would be, the process has to be done really first, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah. If we have an example that we can work on, it's way easier instead of a totally theoretical level to look at this project, but maintain a general theory of how something that works.
I mean,
you've got specific examples. You can be like, "Well, no, this won't work here."
In theory, then we develop the cost sharing strategy too during this process.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's big, because we're never going to build that multi-use facility on our own.
Yeah, but see, the driver, though, is where there's a need, and then get those partners together, you know, find out how many partners are controlling the land around an area where there's a need.
So that puts 179th actually in probably a pretty good spot to start working that process.
There's, not to get too off, but 179th is also another major wastewater. You know, the Clark Regional wastewater. So there's a lot of entities that could have some.
Yeah, it's a, well, right.
You know.
They're planning their stuff up north on 10th a little bit first. But,
I see. I didn't know where they had landed.
But it's a good area because it's not going to develop immediately. It's got plenty of time to be worked on, and there's lots of different entities involved in it.
That's what you want. You want people, you don't want people already invested in there. There's no way they're going to, you know, their blinders are on. You want them open to the idea, knowing what you do know about what the transformation of the county is going to be in 10 years, 5 years. So we have then a process, we can develop a process that says, you know, these are the key stakeholders who, you know, put together what's on this list, but put it in a way that's meaningful for this pilot project. You know, I think that's exciting. I think that's something that would be beneficial not only for the entities that are going to be controlling the water, but it would be beneficial for, hey, this is how we've done it in the past, so, you know.
So you have the retro project that you have here, and we should probably be just more educated on it, so you could talk about, in the future, this would be an example.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
There's plenty of areas on, highly developed areas that sit along the I-5 corridor, like I said, like Highway 99, and where there's going to be have to be retrofits done all throughout that area in there, the hamlet, because there's a ton of hardscape in there that probably doesn't function perfectly. And, you know, there's a lot of partners involved in that area. But, what you know, a virgin area of you know, natural ground, which actually is pretty conducive to a lot of, you know, to build in a fairly cool regional area, a regional facility, multi-use regional facility, you know, 179th, 13th. I mean, there's some potential in there to find those, to work on that. There could be more development around WSU also.
I think a discussion about the process and the potential barriers and impediments now to partnering is the step perhaps ahead of actual doing the planning in that area. Because when you start talking about where might you build a regional facility, we don't have time on tonight's agenda, but we've already looked at it. I mean, I could tell you what opportunities are out there.
Right.
The sort of seeds that I would plant that maybe as you start to think about the process and potentially some of the impediments are, you know, we're essentially talking about master planning for stormwater. This is probably something Nancy's done before. I don't put her on the spot, but
doing one in Beaverton right now.
You start talking about master planning for stormwater in a square mile area with a lot of transportation infrastructure to be developed and a lot of private land to be developed. That's not an insignificant price tag.
No.
It's not something that we have been able to do over the years because of the funding. But that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah, but we're talking about how could this commission, and what I'm thinking about is 10 to 8, we don't want to get past our time, but what do you think about the idea of setting up a little subcommittee and having a leader of the subcommittee from our group? We can vote for these other people that aren't here. But, I mean, honestly, so that they can have a sort of mini work session. First, I guess we should decide if
nobody shows up.
No, that's not necessarily true. Well, wait a minute. Okay. First of all, we can decide whether we want to go with the process. And I think 1, 2, 3, have you guys an opinion one way or another on whether do you think the process would be a good way to approach this type of multi-use?
Are you suggesting that I be a part of the subcommittee?
No, I haven't got there. I haven't got there yet. Not at all, Brian.
We're just saying if you're giving it a thumbs up.
I would vote no on that.
For the process part.
Process versus.
I just want to. I don't think we need a motion for it, but I do think we need to have it in the minutes that we agreed that we're going to approach it that way. And so that the other commissioners would know that we've made that decision. And then I think we should look at orchestrating it, because you're right. People tend to hang back and not participate if we set up a subcommittee. But how else would we then approach it?
Well, we're going to have, all right, everybody show up on, what day are we going to do it next month?
I like to do it the first Wednesday of the month.
All right, so I'll get the room, same room. Mm-hmm.
Same bad time. I haven't made it to one of those yet.
Yeah, well, okay, so the room is at Legacy, third floor.
It's always the first time.
Conference room.
Yes.
At, pick the time. What time? 6:30.
Is this the first Wednesday, you say?
First Wednesday of next month.
December 4th.
December 4th? Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
December 4th.
6 o'clock.
6:30.
6:30. Just like the Ireland meeting.
6:30, okay. Third floor, Legacy. I'll let you know what the conference room is. They got food there. Good restaurant.
Let's just have our whole group.
You do have a good restaurant.
Yeah.
And so everybody
who
shows up, and then we'll hack through it, and then you don't show up, you don't get your opinion heard.
The purpose,
you will be beat.
What's
purpose
that, Ron?
Of our convening,
oh, sorry.
The purpose of our convening that meeting would be to have a work session on this particular item, which is the process for the multi-use regional stormwater facility. How to plan.
Can I come to that meeting?
Yay!
I'll come to that one and we'll do some educating.
Yes, that's...
Bring your GIS models.
What's that?
You bring your GIS models?
Yeah, I'll bring my GIS models.
Okay,
and cool. I'll meet with Jim. Jim and I can meet in between them. I'll energize Jim around this process.
Yeah.
All right.
Tell me when you're going to do that. I'd be interested in that. That.
Only one person can
energize. I need some energy, so you know.
I can energize at least two
people. Okay.
Two people? You have that much energy.
I thought they cut the caffeine.
Zap, yeah.
They cut the skulls.
Here's where they have to save money. So it's up to them. They want skulls, they got to bring them.
Yeah.
Straight stimulants are cheaper.
So, to me, and before we do that, before that next meeting, I'll put my little feelers out to. I'll throw it out to my buddy Housley. Okay.
Sure.
And then I'll talk to Lynn, WSU. Right. I'll just say, hey, look, you know, here's where we're starting
Let's
at.
Let's start creating the buzz.
Just give me a little bit of feedback in there, and maybe hopefully I'll have some of that for when we get together at the meetings. Like, hey, you know, everybody's giving a big thumbs up, but good luck. You know.
Baseball stadium, stormwater facility.
Yeah. I was thinking more like a swim.
Build it and they will.
Yeah, we're gonna have a swimming, a Clark County swim team. You know.
There.
Pond swimming. A pool and a pond. A pond would be good for you.
Oh.
Anyway.
Well, let's all take a nice deep breath. That was a good discussion, and I think we have a plan for how to go to the next step on that. And I'd like to have each person make sure the people that are not here on the commission, that you talk to Susan, if you will.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll call Art.
We always blab about it anyway.
And make sure that it's well known that the meeting's going to take place. Our work session, December 4th. And Ron's going to take some time and join us, so that would be really a fun and also active meeting. So the next item of business is, as you know, we've had some need to find replacement of commissioners, We're supposed to be operating with 9 commissioners, and we haven't since Troy gave his resignation. I think this item must be kind of just to discuss how we would replace them, but isn't there a specific time when the applications are received by the board? Okay, because I thought that was every, the first quarter of every year. But can they be submitted now and the board act on them?
We can submit them anytime we like. Any member of this group can submit it to the Board of County Commissioners. I would submit it to Jennifer Clark. Anytime somebody wants to do that, they can do it. I would suggest that there's 2 people, Dave Morgan and Art Stepps, who's not here tonight. Mm-hmm. Those are the 2 that...
To renew.
To renew, request for renewal of your term. But then it's still up to the Board of County Commissioners to make that determination.
Sure. So they...
They can just decide not to.
Submit your resume in there.
Bobby, to talk about replacement, aside from renewing your...
Right.
...commitment to this commission... Bobby probably knows more than anyone, but to answer your question, I think at any time we have a commissioner resign or decide to move on, we just basically let the board know of that vacancy, and then they will start the process of soliciting for new Clean Water Commission members.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of whenever. Mm-hmm. What we had talked about before, and I don't know if that's what this item was for, you know, that's if someone resigns. Troy at one point let us know that he was thinking of resigning and then sort of was 1 foot in, 1 foot out. So
yes.
I don't even know if we have an official, Earl, do we have an official resignation from Troy? So
yep.
That's Troy's. So at any time we can, and it should be as soon as we know. I didn't know if we knew or not that Troy was definitely out. So if he's definitely out, we can submit that vacancy to the board for a recruitment.
Yeah, I'd like to, I don't know whether this is in the bylaws, I haven't seen it, but I think if, I'd like to put something in there about resignation, because when Troy came to that decision, I think he kind of already said, I probably won't show up anymore. And I'd like to know as a chair that that's being done. So I think part of what I'd like to suggest is that in the next time we do a revision for the bylaws, that we include a clause in there that says if the commissioner is preparing to resign, that they should write a letter and make sure that the chair as well as county staff and board knows about it. So that would be...
Maybe talk to the chair first.
A formalized way of letting yourself go so that the position is vacated. So then the commissioners can say, we need to find a replacement.
Well, you have some people who don't write letters, so I think it might be what he said, notifying you first.
Yeah, notify.
And the board does that process. The Board of County Commissioners.
Yeah,
they do the whole process.
And selection process.
Yeah, that's fine. That's handled quite well.
But I think your point's well taken. If you have someone that's kind of deciding whether or not they want to go in, they might skip a couple meetings and then they resign, and then from that point, then we engage another 2-month process to recruit someone. Now we're down a commissioner 5 months.
Right. Yeah. And here's from my perspective. You missed a few meetings. I missed a few meetings. You know, I'm assuming that people don't come. It's not because they're disinterested. It's because they couldn't make it. But why not have a process that's in there, the notification to the chair of the intent.
Yeah.
Make it this week or this month, or I'm preparing to resign. And then in which case I'd say, you know, send an email or send a quick note.
Yeah.
We need to be notified.
No, I think that's good.
Not an arduous process, but something where we at least know it's formalized. Because I did feel...
If you're going to quit, you should...
Tell somebody.
Let somebody know when you've decided you're going to quit.
Yeah.
And even if it's just like, oh, my, you know, my...
Yeah.
My workload is quadrupled and I don't have time anymore. Or it's his path that it seemed to be more of a political statement than... Still, like, hey,
what?
I'm really busy the next 2 months, but I'll be back. Versus, I'm out of here.
Very good, very good. So is there anything else on that agenda item that we should...
That's my question.
Do you think that requires a motion to have that in the bylaws?
We get the bylaws.
No, okay.
Well, we need to modify the bylaws and then bring that back to this group.
I think I'd like to formalize it because we'll probably won't modify the bylaws until that comes up. So, do you want to make that motion?
The motion is that anybody who is preparing to resign, see if I got this right, needs to make formal notification to the chair and staff prior to resignation. Is that correct?
I'll second that motion.
Okay.
I'll move that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Ayes have it. So that's formalized.
So would you like us to modify a section of the bylaws to incorporate that concept and bring it back to the commission to approve the bylaws?
The common courtesy clause.
I think that's...
Let's call it the common... I mean,
yeah,
put a little
absolutely.
Shame into it. Just call it the common courtesy clause.
I will call it the common courtesy
clause. There you go. Let somebody know before you just don't show up.
Yeah, no time like...
I'm going to write that down.
That way you get a little smile and everybody remembers it and they'll go, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. What happens if you don't follow the common courtesy?
Well, there's no
thing.
Hey, hand that over there to
Virginia. Yeah. Common courtesy. You want one?
Nice.
Yeah, I haven't seen this. Okay.
So this next item of the is the time when we nominate and elect next year's two positions, the chair and the vice chair.
Wait, I have a sheet of paper too.
And I think I'd like to have Earl kind of run this part of the session.
What I'll do is just walk through this note. As you can see, that Nancy's going to be resigning. Also, I think what's going to be important here is that what I'm going to do is in a moment give this opportunity to Jim as the vice chair to run the meeting during this time when we're talking about looking at who's going to be nominated, and then after he's done that for chair, then you'll be able to take over the reins of this group so that we can elect him as the vice chair. So there's no conflict of interest here. So as you can see, Nancy is letting everybody know that she's going to be resigning. So that kind of begs the question of, we'll have another position that we have to fill here in the very near future.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, though...
Hey, Earl, just real quick before you go on this discussion. This isn't something that I was going to bring up tonight, but this discussion about common courtesy, I don't want this person to be sort of painted in the light of the common courtesy clause, but I got an email from Don Lowe today letting me know that he was resigning from the commission as well.
As of today? As of this
week? He didn't specify.
Oh.
Let me know that he was stepping back from the commission as well. I don't want to paint Don in the light of just not showing up and not telling us. He definitely let me know, so I want to pass that on to you guys and for you to consider in your nominations as well for chair and vice chair. So we'll be down three.
Well, we got to get some other people in here.
Yeah.
So
is that a quorum until they fill?
No. We have a quorum right now, and we have the ability to do this process today. Right. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to do this process until January.
Right. No, but I was...
Yeah, we'll have six.
We'll have six. Okay.
So it'll be important for people to be there.
So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to you, Jim, and the vice chair, to decide who...
I nominate you for chair.
Second.
There's a voting process.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Can't make him be the chair.
You can't make him be the chair.
I am really ticked off.
Well, it's not immediate.
Like, whatever. Oh, okay. You know the gig. I don't want to do this, but I'll accept the nomination for chair. All right. Because I don't want to do it, really, but. I'll do it.
So are there
any other nominations?
I nominated.
Huh?
I nominated you, so I can't second.
There was some question about whether or not we were in the right...
I'm sorry?
There was a question about whether or not we were in the right path at this point.
Right path, what do you mean?
I mean, in terms of that's where we were in the process.
Well, what we're looking at is Jim's vice chair is nominating the chair. Somebody nominated Jim to be the chair.
Okay.
So all I'm asking right now is if we go around the table and just ask...
Vote aye or nay?
No, not yet. There's going to be a piece of paper. I want everybody's signature on the paper.
Okay.
So are there any other people, any other members of this group who want to be chair of this commission?
And would like to be nominated.
Be nominated chair.
Or nominate someone else.
No.
Or nominate somebody else that's not here.
And vice chair, no. Okay, I'm just going to clarify that quickly.
What's that?
Before I get that one in. No on both for me.
Sorry.
Anybody else for chair? Okay. No, this switches back over to...
What happens in this group, Jim?
Yeah, right.
We still have at least a couple members that...
And I appreciate that, but we're still going forward right now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to switch us back over now to Nancy to talk about who should be the vice chair of this group.
Yeah, and I think I am stepping down next year for, you know, a variety of different reasons, but as chairman of this, I feel like the vice chair position has been really valuable and that it's one where the pressure is not as high as it's the chair, but it's a real... important role. So I would look, ask you to consider whether you want to be nominated. and time on the commission helps a little bit too, seeing how the thing works. And then we'll be working with some new members next year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could feel it in your heart. Does anybody have any nominations? I would start off, but I was going to nominate David.
I'll second.
Perfect.
And if you hadn't said what you said, I was strongly considering you as a new member of the time of the commission already.
Yes.
So perhaps next year.
Okay. Consider it next year.
Okay. Are there any others from this room? Okay.
We should nominate, all right?
You can nominate people that aren't here. They don't have to be here. We will check with them to make sure that we wouldn't, if Brian wasn't here, we'd nominate him, and you would nominate him, and then he'd say, I don't want to do it.
I only missed one time this year. Come on.
Honestly, you're not going to.
September was the only one I missed.
I was using your absence as an example.
What about Susan? Do you have any idea whether she... I know she was ill today, but...
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I've never talked about it. You don't want to ask me.
Oh, I know. But I know you're good friends and you travel together sometimes. She hasn't indicated one way or another.
No, she hasn't talked about it at all. Her mother-in-law died, and they had big doings over the weekend. Her mind is not.
Nice.
And then she got this asthma attack.
So we have to finish the vice chair election tonight, then, right?
Yeah, we should.
No, it's Casey. You
want. But like I said, you can still, I mean, for the nomination portion, you can nominate yourself. You can nominate someone that's here. You can nominate someone that's
absolutely
not here.
Well, then I'll nominate Art as well, and then.
Well, if Dave's willing.
Yeah, I'm.
Do the other board members get to vote if they're not here, or is it just going to be just what's here?
Just what's here.
Okay.
Oh, then.
Then we'll just vote. You win.
Done. Sign whatever.
Quick.
So, I have a question for you. On this. So when is your last, you're figuring when? January?
Well, the thing usually goes through this February date for some reason, but we won't have a meeting in February, so my last meeting will be January.
Okay, so you are going to come down, you're going to provide input on as we go through and work on?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. And then, are you going to keep doing that maybe a little bit afterwards?
Well, that's what if the county would allow me to stay on the TAC as the Clean Water Commission kind of representative, I will continue to work
you're
with
not
you.
Not a representative anymore. You're done. You quit. You got your resignation right here.
But I represent.
Nice courtesy.
I figured that TAC will be done in June, most likely. It'll be kind of dissolved or minimized, and. I will participate in the work sessions, but I can't show up as a commissioner. Can't do this. It's not because I don't have an interest in it, you know that. But I think it's my intention is to get some good new commissioners on board that will be my voice. You might take my point of view for the future.
Well, you know, obviously, I'm sure I'm very disappointed. I know that you have to make your own personal decisions, but you had a lot of positive influence on me personally, on your knowledge and your. Care about the Clean Water Commission and a lot of the things that are going on down here. So, I mean, I'm going to miss you and your skill set and your personality on this commission. I don't know what else to say other than that.
So yes, we will miss your reliability.
And it's a. You're not very big in stature, but you got huge shoes to fill. Whoever comes in here to as your replacement, not as chair, because that's me. but as a Clean Water Commissioner. So I appreciate all your hard work.
With that, let's go ahead and do these right quick, so get those back to me.
Okay.
What are you doing?
This is like the vote for the Woodland City Council seat.
That's right. Right. Woodland City Council seat. The right option.
Yeah. I mean, which one in the Ridgefield one?
Yes. Just put your elected one and sign your name.
There was
writing
in that Ridgefield.
Yeah.
Right with this advice.
Wait,
okay.
So...
Oh, wait a minute.
Okay. Hmm? You need another sheet?
No.
No. We're getting it. Okay. Oh, I see. I got it. And a nice form, by the way.
Yeah.
That's very good. Seen a lot of good ones in the chambers. That's nice.
I went and they called Susan up and asked her how she feels about that stuff.
Too late now.
Yeah. Is it really?
Okay, let's make this official. Let's see.
Wait.
What?
Oh, did you do yours yet?
She hasn't voted.
No, I don't want to fill it out.
You don't want to vote on the nominations for chair and vice chair?
No.
Okay. Does that wreck it since we don't have a quorum then?
It does.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Then it makes it not happen.
Well, but it can happen. Oh, it has to be this time?
We're looking to get it done this
time. It should be.
Oh, let me call Susan.
It's part of us putting it on the agenda was to let people know we're going to be doing elections tonight.
Yes, I know. I understood that.
I know that Susan wasn't able to attend, but our intent is to do the nominations and then vote among the nominations tonight.
I'm sorry. I depend on Susan's advice here. Besides, we can get her vote.
I'm going to take... This is great. It's like the TV show. Do you mind if I take a restroom break?
Yeah, call a friend. Call a friend. And the answer
I could have done that, and then it would have been... You know, you wouldn't have had that.
She wasn't asking.
Call a friend. That was on a couple different shows.
Hi, Susan. That's Virginia. I'm here in the meeting.
The text.
And they want us to vote now. Did you want to be in any position here? Chair or vice chair?
Well, she can't really vote. She's not here.
Yeah.
Well, she has
no, but
vote,
I could.
Really?
I could.
We can.
Okay, got it. All right. Bye. Nope.
No vote, okay. But you get to vote.
Well, that makes it easy. Chair, vice chair. That was right. The nomination.
Vote yes, and
okay.
We did our job.
All right. I'm used to having a bunch of big discussion on this.
We lost the ballot.
Yep, she didn't sign it.
The pain chads.
Oh, you had to do something else.
So, we got your priority of getting these seats filled in here so we can start.
There we go. Now,
tell those guys at the end of the hall to get on it.
Well, they need to know. What do you want me to do? Want me to call them?
It's a fairly formal process. It's a formal process. They request.
I know it's a formal process. It needs to start tomorrow.
We'll notify him tomorrow.
Okay.
We just got the information from Nancy.
Okay.
Just got the information about Don.
All right.
And we just confirmed about Troy, so we'll get that information out.
All right.
Plus, they will also recruit for the other two positions, for
Art
and Morgan.
So. Right. Well, we put in.
And they'll have to resubmit to stay on the board.
Here we go.
It's not handled by us at all. It's
no,
handled by the board.
I understand. What I didn't understand was that when Troy was gone for so long, I kept looking on the website. Hey, there should be somebody nominating for. They're looking for two people for the planning commission. Which, when they say vacancies, doesn't necessarily mean vacancies. It just means somebody's term's up. But to get some people in here. Oops. All right.
Did we get the vote done?
We're done. So, are we getting together then, Ron, before next?
Yes. Yeah. We can talk about it after we adjourn. I think there's an item on here. We're not going to. The annual report we have to skip.
All right. All right. Did you have more?
Just that part.
That was it?
Yep. So, I guess we'll leave it tonight since she's still chair.
She has to.
Have to say yes to close the meeting.
He has to come back and pound the gavel.
Exactly. And then you get to be the chair. What's your chair?
You get the hammer.
The chair is
incapacitated.
More
of a rebel on the
hammer.
Side.
The chair is incapacitated or unable to move on.
What do you mean?
Your vice chair, just take take over.
I am the vice chair. I am going to take over. The meeting is now adjourned.
Yeah. Oh.